Imagine spending 60 hours gathering firewood just to produce what a modern light bulb creates in 1 second. That's not a dystopian future. It's our not-so-distant past. 300,000 years ago, light was precious, life was short, and survival was never guaranteed. Today, we flip switches without thinking, order products that arrive the next day, and expect shelves stocked with everything imaginable. How did we get here? The answer lies in understanding economics not as abstract theory, but as the story of human ingenuity wrestling with scarcity across millennia. From the first plows that transformed nomadic hunters into settled farmers, to the algorithms that now predict what we'll buy before we know we want it, economics traces humanity's journey from brutal subsistence to unprecedented abundance, and reveals the patterns, innovations, and choices that shaped our world. Life 300,000 years ago was brutal. 4 in 10 children died young, average lifespan was 33, and violence claimed 1 in 7 lives. Agriculture emerged around 3300 BCE in the Indus Valley, creating humanity's first economic revolution. Communities built permanent settlements and generated surplus, enabling wheeled carts, toys, and trade networks. The plow made farming 5 to 6 times more productive by harnessing animal power, but human height dropped 10 centimeters as diets narrowed and diseases spread in crowded settlements. Plow farming's upper body strength requirements created male-dominated systems. Countries with historical plow use still show less gender equality today. Geography dealt an uneven hand. Eurasia had storable grains and domesticable animals like cattle, while Africa's zebras and Australia's kangaroos resisted domestication. These advantages enabled Eurasian powers to colonize other continents, funded by agricultural surpluses. Trade transformed isolated communities into interconnected civilizations. China's 1,600-kilometer Grand Canal made Chinese living standards exceed England's by 1000 CE. Coastal cities with deep-water ports became financial centers where merchants pioneered risk-sharing. Trade's greatest gift wasn't goods, it was ideas. Italian reading glasses, 1290, spread rapidly across Europe. Germany's printing press, 1440, produced more books in 50 years than the previous millennium. Social mobility remained limited under China's Fengjian system, India's caste system, and European feudalism. The Pepys family has attended Oxford and Cambridge at 20 times the general rate for 5 centuries, illustrating the Great Gatsby curve, where wider economic gaps make climbing harder. The 1347 bubonic plague killed 1/3 of Europe's population, but shifted power dramatically. Worker scarcity doubled real wages, while land rents collapsed, effectively ending feudalism. Europe's maritime revolution enabled Columbus's 1492 Atlantic crossing, De Gama's 1498 route to India, and Magellan's global circumnavigation. The Columbian Exchange brought corn, potatoes, and chilies from the Americas, while oranges, sugar, and pigs traveled westward. Tragically, European diseases killed over 4/5 of some American populations, and more than 12 million people were trafficked across the Atlantic between 1501 and 1866. Spain extracted tens of thousands of tons of silver from Mexico and Bolivia, becoming fabulously wealthy, temporarily. The massive influx of precious metals proved poisonous, like printing too much money. Prices rose, imports grew, exports shrank, and Spain went from world leader to backwater within 2 centuries, an early example of the resource curse affecting resource-rich nations today. Italy's Medici family took a different path. As bankers, valuing stability, they sponsored artists like Da Vinci and Michelangelo, helping birth the Italian Renaissance. They understood that acquiring resources through trade rather than conquest created lasting prosperity. Disease patterns shaped colonialism too. In West Africa, where half of European settlers died within a year from malaria, colonial powers took an extractive approach, removing wealth without investing in infrastructure. In territories with lower mortality rates, like Canada and Australia, colonizers invested in railways and universities. The Dutch and British East India Companies pioneered the joint stock company, allowing investors to pool risks through shared ownership. though their government-granted monopolies also generated enormous profits through overcharging captive consumers. On March 9, 1776, two revolutions converged. Adam Smith published The Wealth of Nations one day after James Watt's first profitable steam engine entered the market. Smith showed how specialization dramatically increased productivity, with pin factories producing far more through division of labor than individual craftsmen. He revealed how markets coordinate self-interest for social benefit, though he worried about monopolies. Economic thinking became rooted in Jeremy Bentham's utilitarianism, the greatest happiness of the greatest number, while William Stanley Jevons introduced diminishing marginal utility, explaining why we enjoy the first glass of water more than the fifth. Not everyone welcomed industrial innovation. In 1811, Luddites threatened to smash mechanical knitting machines. The British government mobilized more troops against them than against Napoleon, making machine breaking a capital offense. The Luddites feared technology would destroy jobs, a worry that proved unfounded as British employment increased over 10% between 1811-1821. Yet their concerns weren't baseless. Handloom weavers' wages did fall, and industrialization's benefits took decades to reach workers. The 1840s Hungry Forties saw failed harvests push up grain prices, while growing urban industrialist power pressured rural aristocrats. The Economist was founded in 1843. When the Corn Laws were abolished in 1846, analysis showed the bottom 90% of Britons benefited. French economist Frédéric Bastiat exposed protectionist fallacies through satire, writing a mock petition from candlemakers requesting protection from unfair competition from the sun. David Ricardo introduced comparative advantage, explaining why even less productive nations benefit from trade. These intellectual victories for free trade reshaped the global economy, though Britain often forced trade through violence, attacking China for refusing opium imports. At the turn of the 20th century, Alfred Marshall became the world's most influential economist. His 1890 textbook explained supply and demand as complementary forces, like scissor blades. On a graph with price and quantity axes, supply slopes upward while demand slopes downward, intersecting at market equilibrium. This Marshallian cross remains fundamental to economic analysis. The automotive industry revolutionized manufacturing through the assembly line. In 1908, Ford executive Peter Martin proposed moving cars toward parts after visiting Chicago slaughterhouses. Retail underwent equally dramatic transformation. Harry Selfridge opened his revolutionary London department store in 1909, making shopping entertaining by letting customers handle merchandise and positioning perfume counters at entrances. He famously declared, "The customer is always right." Frank Woolworth pioneered five-and-dime stores operating on the pile-em high and sell-em cheap principle, using scale to negotiate lower supplier prices, a strategy inherited by modern giants like Walmart. The early 1900s saw unprecedented migration, as steel-hulled ships cut the Liverpool to New York journey from 53 to 8 days. World War I shattered this interconnected world. The Allied victory reflected overwhelming economic advantage, 5 times the population and 3 times the income of the Central Powers. Germany's reparations of 132 billion gold marks triggered hyperinflation so severe that by 1923, items costing 1 mark in 1918 required 1 trillion marks. The Roaring Twenties ended in October 1929 when the stock market crashed, eventually falling 89%. Unemployment hit 25%, with 10 cities appearing worldwide. John Maynard Keynes argued downturns occurred when collective, individual actions hurt everyone. His solution, government spending. Friedrich von Hayek countered that recessions were necessary corrections. The 1930 Smoot-Hawley Tariff Act, raising tariffs on 20,000 imports despite 1,028 economists urging a veto, worsened the Depression's length. Yet, crisis enabled reform. Frances Perkins, the first female U.S. cabinet member, helped design Social Security in 1935, dramatically reducing elderly poverty. World War II's outcome again reflected economic fundamentals. The Allies possessed twice the population and 40% higher income than the Axis. The 1944 Bretton Woods Conference established the World Bank and IMF, ending economic isolationism. The post-war decades saw remarkable growth. The French called it Les Trente Glorieuses, Italians Il Boom Economico. This era featured expanding welfare states, progressive taxation, powerful unions, and widespread homeownership. The 1942 Beveridge Report in the UK identified five social evils: squalor, ignorance, want, idleness, and disease, proposing universal insurance programs so compelling British voters ousted Churchill in 1945 to implement them. While Western economies flourished, China suffered devastation under Mao. The stark differences between East and West Germany and North and South Korea demonstrated how communism suppressed prosperity. Then, in 1978, 18 villagers in Shaogang signed a secret contract that could have cost them their lives. Having watched half their village die during the Great Leap Forward, they allowed families private plots and retention of some harvest. That year's harvest exceeded the previous 5 years combined. Their secret became China's pathway out of poverty. As China increased market freedoms, the UK and US moved similarly under Thatcher and Reagan. Thatcher privatized utilities and sold over 1 million public housing units. Reagan slashed top tax rates from 70% to 28%, broke union power, and deregulated industries. Both followed Milton Friedman's libertarian economics. Central banks gained independence, ending the political business cycle. In 1991, facing a foreign exchange crisis, Indian Finance Minister Manmohan Singh abolished the restrictive License Raj system. Like Britain's corn laws repeal and China's property reforms, India's changes dramatically accelerated growth. From 1985 to 1995, trade volumes exploded. The WTO formed in 1994. Asia's transformation followed export-led growth, beginning with four tiger economies, then five tiger cub economies, rising from low to middle income within two generations. The early 2000s saw the dot-com bubble collapse. Pets.com raised $82 million in its 2000 IPO, only to crash from 11 to 19 cents per share by year's end. In 2002, Daniel Kahneman won the Nobel Prize for demonstrating systematic departures from rational economic models. By 2005, housing prices had surged from 7 years of middle-income earnings, 1995, to 10 years, fueled by deteriorating lending standards like ninja loans, no income, no job, no assets. The 2008 financial crisis, driven by greedy bankers, incompetent rating agencies, and lax policymakers, saw U.S. home values drop one-fifth, leaving 1 in 10 mortgage holders underwater. Millions lost homes while Goldman Sachs paid billions in bonuses. Post-crisis data validated efficient markets. 65% of actively managed U.S. equity funds underperform annually, rising to 92% over 10 years. COVID-19 plunged the world into its worst downturn since the Great Depression. Global income fell 5% in Q2 2020, with 400 million jobs lost and governments providing over $10 trillion in support. The pandemic exposed market concentration vulnerabilities. Abbott's plant closure left 70% of U.S. supermarkets without infant formula. Despite progress, 719 million people live in extreme poverty. The elephant curve shows divergent outcomes since 1980. Rapid growth for emerging economies' middle classes, stagnant growth for advanced nations' middle classes, spectacular growth for global elites. Yet remarkable progress has occurred. Global child mortality dropped from 14% to 4%. Workers earn more daily than 1,900 counterparts earned weekly. And technology from the plow to the internet has revolutionized economies. Specialization and trade lifted hundreds of millions from poverty in China. Humanity overcame feudalism, colonialism, and slavery. Smallpox, which killed 500 million in its final century, is eradicated. IQ scores rose so dramatically that today's average person would outperform 98% of the population from a century ago. Challenges persist. George Akerlof's identity economics shows people define themselves by what they produce, not consume. When technology eliminates factory jobs, cheaper televisions offer little consolation. Artificial intelligence may transform society like steam engines and electricity before it, boosting average incomes while eliminating many jobs. Climate change represents tail risk, small chances of catastrophic outcomes requiring insurance-like investments in ethical AI and carbon reduction. Nearly a century after the Great Depression, economists haven't tamed boom and bust cycles, yet markets remain remarkable. COVID's brief toilet paper shortages shocked us precisely because market abundance is so reliable. Economics offers practical life guidance, weighing costs and benefits, considering opportunity costs, thinking at the margin, and accounting for externalities. From firelight that once cost 60 hours of labor to abundance at a switch's flip, economics tells the story of human ingenuity transforming scarcity into prosperity, a journey continuing as we face challenges shaping humanity's next chapter.